Hello and welcome to, or welcome back to, Colonial Outcasts, your friendly or semi-friendly neighborhood anti-imperialist podcast. We are continuing to center the conflict and the deteriorating situation in Palestine, the escalating tensions with Iran, the continuing blockade and naval action in Yemen, and everything in between. And today we are talking about something, a story that you may or may not have been tracking in Central Europe. And it is Germanic fascism, or what I'm calling Germanic fascism. I am heavily Germanic. My grandmother was German. And, you know, I'm just personally not surprised by this at all. The German government's problematic past with different genocidal actions, the notable one during the Second World War. There's also some things, colonial actions going on in Namibia. And with all this problematic history, they're just repeating the same function, the same actions. They're double downing on their support of the Israeli government in the face of overwhelming violations of international law and blatant war crimes, a blatant expression of genocidal intent by leading members of the Knesset and the defense ministry and the Israeli Defense Force. So to help us kind of explore this and get a internal German perspective, we have Helene Fares. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. Yes. I'm an American. For all of you Americans, it's Helen Fares. so yeah, she's coming to us from Germany. She is a journalist. She was I'll let her talk about, to the extent that she wants to, about getting persecuted for her pro-Palestine beliefs, but in her position. So before we get into that, thank you so much for coming on, Helene.
Thank you, Greg. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate you taking time to listen to my story and giving me the space to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important because people... you know, they expect Europe to be some enlightened place because of, like, you know, socialism and different standards of living than you have in North America, especially the United States. But there's still a lot of supremacist stuff going on. And it's, I think its most manifest expression is happening in Germany right now. So would you briefly talk to us about your recent experience as a journalist in Germany and as a pro-Palestine activist?
Yeah. So to give a little bit of context, I'm from Syria. So I was born and raised in Germany, but I am Syrian. And it's interesting how all my life people were trying to tell me that I'm German when I was assimilated well enough. But when I said something that was critical, then I'm the Syrian, you know? So this is why I always say I'm the Syrian, I'm not a German. And it showed quite showed up quite well. And please excuse everybody who's listening. My English is not perfect. So if I'm lacking words, please bear with me for a second until I find it. Until quite recently, I worked for a public German network. So in Germany, we have public TV networks or media networks that stream on TV, they stream on Twitch, they are on all social media platforms, and they do all kinds of work, educational work, they do entertainment, anything really. And every household in Germany has to pay for this. There's a set amount of money that every household in Germany has to pay. And this goes into these public German networks. There's a lot of people who are against it in Germany, but yeah, it's the law. So I used to work for them, and I was working for them for the past 10 years because they really enjoyed working with someone like me who, you know, could be tokenized. She's a Syrian, she's from a Muslim family. Then it was still really easy to work with me because my German is very perfect. I was born here, I grew up here. So it's really, let me say, easy to put me in white frameworks and say, we're happy to present to you the non-white person. So I've always been an activist way before I started working in journalism or hosting shows. and doing documentaries as well. And I've always done this work. And this is why a lot of people from the media industry wanted to work with me, because they knew that there's like a certain standard of morale, for example, that they buy when they work with me. And of course, people that follow me, I have a good amount of followers on Instagram, they trust me. So if I tell them, look, I'm hosting this or that format or show, then they are way more likely to go look at it, for example. So this is what they bought with working with me. And what happened quite recently is that I've been very active, as I've been in the last multiple years, about what is happening in Palestine, and in the last 6 to 7 months, what has been happening in Gaza. And there have been quite a few, you know, moments where I was told, Helene, interesting what you say, and maybe it could get you into trouble. This was the kind of wording, you know, that I heard. But I'm sorry to like ramble on right now, because it's quite a long story with a lot of context that is necessary to explain what's happening. So there's a conservative stream of people right now. The far right is on the rise in Germany. It's crazy and scary as well. And what has been happening on Twitter is there's a Twitter account that calls itself Anti-Semitism Watch of the Public Network, or the Public Networks. And they basically, we think we know who it is. It's a conservative little white dude. That person looks for every single host or journalist that works for the public networks and really tries to find anti-Semitism in anything, really. So he has quite a lot of followers, because a lot of people are against paying, and this is where I come back to the beginning of the story, these payments that you have to pay by law to the public networks. So they have a lot of people who are like, I don't want to pay this stuff, so let's find some criticism about it. So all the other media networks, especially like tabloids in Germany, they're trying to crash the public networks. And they've been trying to do that with both racism, so attacking Black and people of color, especially Muslims. The tabloids in Germany love trashing Muslims and Arabs. And they've been attacking the public networks through us. And so far, they didn't get too far with that. But now that I've publicly talked so intensely about what's going on in Palestine, and I'm not scared of calling it a genocide because I have eyes and ears and a brain. I've been attacked quite strongly by these people. So the tabloids were always on, like, watching me. I knew this. All these so-called journalists, they were on my case. I knew this. And I knew one wrong word and they can completely trash me. So about 2 weeks ago, I went shopping. So this is where the real story starts. I went shopping and I wanted to buy chocolate milk, vegan chocolate milk. It's been my comfort drink for a couple of weeks, going through this horrible phase of me doing humanitarian aid in Gaza and it being so insanely intense, and me just getting up in the middle of the night, 4 a.m., getting out of a call right before going into the next call and just drinking chocolate milk from the carton. That was my, you know, we have these weird phases as humans. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I went to the shop, wanted to buy the chocolate milk, and then I remembered, damn, I don't even know if this company is okay to buy from. So I have an app on my phone called No Thanks, which looks, you can put down the name of the brand and then it tells you if this brand is on the boycott list or not. And it was. So I Googled and I did some research in the shop, in the supermarket. I was like, okay, the owner of this brand supports the Israeli food startup scene. So I made a decision of, okay, it's on the boycott list. I now know why. I did a little bit of research and then I put it back. And then I showed this scenario to my Instagram followers. Talked about it. It's a really like, it's a soft thing. You know, this is like by far not the most critical thing.
I mean, it's really basic BDS stuff, you know?
Right.
It's not even inflammatory.
It's not even BDS. If you even want, like, you can even take it out of the BDS context and just say, because, you know, BDS is an organization, you know, it's a movement. It doesn't even have to be that. Although, of course, I'm not opposed, but it doesn't even have to be that. It can only be, oh, we are real time watching what is happening in Gaza. I, with my eyes, ears, and brain, can understand that I don't want to support that. And I know that I can vote with my dollar, as you Americans love to say. Mm-hmm. So I make a conscious decision and I talk about it. So this Twitter account wrote about this. And you know that the Nazis, they also used boycotting, but in a different way, in a way that led to their genocide of the Jewish people. Yeah. And they used the slogan, "Don't buy from Jews." So that is how it was, you know, framed. And then,
oh, okay.
So then this Twitter account said that I said, "Don't buy from Jews," which of course is a lie. I never said the word Jews. And I also don't mean it. That's also important. You cannot say something but still mean it, but I never meant it and I never said it. And they, a tabloid, a big, like the biggest German tabloid, which is a trashy piece of paper. Mm-hmm. They then took this on and wrote about it. And why they did that was not because I'm who I am or I have a big following on Instagram. It is because they want to trash the public networks in Germany. Mm-hmm. So this is how it functions, you know? Okay. So they're like a far right conservative, whatever you want to call it, tabloid. They want to trash the public network, and I was used as the tool. So they put so much pressure on the public network, which is called SWR, that I used to work for, that they then let me go. I offered them, like, we can have a conversation about this. Let's see how we can handle this, because none of what I said isn't covered by free speech. I'm an activist. This is what you bought. You know, this is what you're paying for. But then they let me go. And the most interesting thing about it is I was on the call. And I was asking them, when are you going to do the press release? When are you going to let the press know? And they're like, oh, we don't know. So I Google my name. And this tabloid had already posted about SWR letting me go. SWR is in English. So while I was still on my call, where they told me that they would end working with me, they, you know, already
done it.
Told the tabloid. Yeah, it's crazy. So yeah, I'm sorry, that was the very long story with a lot of context, but I think it's really important to understand that there's like mechanisms behind that. It's not super easy to understand why things are the way they are in Germany, I think. So yeah, that's what happened. And then I got trashed by nearly every single tabloid or newspaper in Germany, and it was with headlines, Israel hating public network host Helene Fares, Jew, don't buy from Jews, which, you know, they're trashing me for something that I never said, which is also why I don't feel bad, because there's nothing bad I did, you know. So yeah, that's the story.
Well, I mean, I'm sorry that sucks. I mean, I got doxxed as well. They found my social security number and my address, and got a few death threats, so I relocated until my lease expired. And it you know, it's going around, but honestly, I think they're running out of steam.
It's crazy.
I really don't get death threats anymore. I think they're just tired of it. But when we look at Germany, I think...
Does it scare you, though? Does it scare you? What happens if you read them?
Oh, I'm kind of messed up. Like, I enlisted into a combat unit the day I got out of high school, so I kind of have a certain psychology where it just makes me feel more alive. Oh, I could also, or I could probably just go back to therapy, but no.
I was like, that sounds very white man of you right now.
Yeah, I know it's inherently problematic, but that's how I experience death threats sometimes. But okay. So we don't, as outsiders, we don't understand the internal politics within Germany, within the media. I mean, we do have our own ultra-conservative, hyper-national fascist push in America that just wants to control everything, wants to control the media, wants to suppress content. As well, and then you were used as a symbolic sacrificial lamb, it seems. But when we look at Germany, especially with the pro-Palestine protests, we see a lot of like manifested physical violence by the cops. Yeah. I would just like to play that. And I'm sure you've been to protests. I would just like you to respond, like, how widespread is this? Does the public support it, et cetera, et cetera? So here we go. This is from a few days ago. So if you're just listening to the audio, we have a bunch of German police officers holding, I don't know, it could be like pepper spray or whatever, guys kicking an old woman. They're arresting a anti-Zionist.
It's actually my friend there, yeah.
Oh, that's your friend there?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, they're taking like five cops to put cuffs on this guy, your friend. You have cops pushing people. Yeah, they look really scared.
There's a Jewish guy on the floor. That's my friend Udi. He's part of a very important group in Germany of Jewish people who are in support of the Palestinians and against the genocide. And he's wearing a kippah. Is it the same word in English? Kippah?
A yarmulke.
A yarmulke, and it's a watermelon print, basically.
Yep. And there's actually someone yelling in English, they're scared, they're scared. Referencing the cops, because they're very overwhelmed, and they seem to be getting more violent the more energetic these protests get.
Yeah. It's crazy.
So yep, that they almost look like American cops. Wow. You guys have that to look forward to.
Yeah. It's so crazy because the last couple of years I've always said, I never want to move to the US. It's so dangerous. Like, cops are so dangerous in the US. And now I'm in the middle of that, you know.
Yeah. Do you feel like this resurgence in the pro-Palestine cause in response to the genocide in Gaza has kind of like sparked something latent inside these police forces? Like they didn't expect it. They don't know how to handle it. So they're just reacting with like jackbooted violence.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know what the fuck is up with German police right now. I don't understand. I understand what's happening on the political side. I understand that our foreign affairs minister, who's supposedly more to the leftist side, that they lied to us, that they just bullshitted us over the last couple of years, that they're so pro-Israel that they're talking of being siblings. You know, they were talking about when the genocide started. They were talking about being on Israel's side without ever being able to be broken, you know. I understand what's going on there. I'm disappointed, but I understand it. But the thing is that with the police and, you know, we also have I don't know what the English word is for this, but the inside affairs minister. I don't know, like when internal, like inside of Germany, like their internal affairs. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So that person is also quite, I'll put it in quotes, conservative. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like whatever happens on this level, you know, whatever solidarity happens on this level with Israel is what will be communicated down. And you also have to, and I think this is the main thing to understand, for me at least, what's going on with the police. The way that people who are against the genocide are being framed in the media makes us look so dangerous while we're humans who are against the genocide, you know, they make us look like we're fighters while we're like trying to protest for peace, and also using the most peaceful way of protesting by boycotting and going to demonstrations or protests that we actually have to get approval for. We're not even going on the streets without getting the police approval or the state approval for it, you know?
Yeah. So I think that's an interesting point about, you know, top-down communication, because the entire case made at the ICJ in terms of proving genocide, part of that's genocide incitement speech, and it's genocide incitement speech from leadership. So senior officials in the Knesset, senior commanders in the IDF, saying things like, oh, you know, Yoav Gallant calling Palestinians human animals. And then you have Benny Gantz and Smotrich and all those, and Herzog and all those psychos saying anything from nuke Gaza to, you know, Gaza's a pit of snakes. And it demonstrably affects and changes the conduct of the troops on the ground. So potentially we're seeing the same thing with the police there. Also, cops generally don't like disorder. They don't feel like they're not in control. They're very used to their own authority. And this is an unprecedented public resurgency of anti-establishment sentiment, because the establishment is conducting and condoning a genocide. I think for outsiders, what's so puzzling is how there isn't a lot, there doesn't seem to be any introspection within the mainstream German media or government that, hey, there's so much, you know, shame and problematic stuff surrounding the Reich that they just don't see any correlation between the Reich and the current incarnation. You could argue the perpetual incarnation of the Israeli government. Like, there's no connection between like fascism and like, you know, how military detention and, you know, certain genocide speech, like there's just this lack of self-awareness that is kind of mind-boggling to the outsiders. Again, not to me, but to like a lot of people that look at this.
I think something that's really important to understand is how, when you go to school in Germany, how big of a role the Holocaust plays in our education. Of course, very important, because the learning behind it is never again, you know, never again. This is why we learn about these things. But what a lot of people seem to have learned from this is never again for these kinds of people, never again for Jewish people, never again for people that live in Israel, because we have, as Germans, I say we, but I don't mean we, I mean Germans, there's an inherent, like a feeling of inherited guilt. And I think there is such a big need in the society to get rid of this guilt. Because so many people of my generation, I feel like this is an observation, this is not a scientifically proven opinion, but I feel like so many people who are in my generation, they feel like, what do I have to do with the Holocaust? What do I have to do? Why do I have to feel guilty? Why do I have to pay reparations of any form for something that I haven't done? Mm-hmm. I wasn't related to this in any kind of way. So being a patriot, for example, in Germany, that is an absolute no-no. Like, you will not see a patriot that is not like perceived as someone who's in the right spectrum. And that's, I think, something that has been very toxic for a lot of people in Germany, that feel like, why can every other nation in the world be patriotic and their youth can be patriotic, but when we do it, we're Nazis, like, to put it in short ways, you know? If you in Germany, if in front of your house in the States, you have that everywhere. You have your flag everywhere. Every single country you go, you have your flags. In Germany, if you have your flag in front of your house, the German flag, it's weird. And I think it's wrong that, or I, you know what? I think that this is what led to people overcompensating and feeling weird about identity and just being extreme about positions and opinions, because it feels like there's not enough space for the coexistence of multiple opinions on things. You're either with what the mainstream says, or you're a conspiracy theorist, for example. Or, and I have to say that I am also guilty of that. I was guilty of that in the past. I'm going to be honest with when it came to like COVID and the vaccine. Mm-hmm. I felt like we all have to do what the government is telling us to do. And I don't, you know, regret doing what I was told was the best thing and doing my research on it. But whenever someone else said another opinion, I quickly thought, oh, that must be a conspiracy theorist, you know, which is wrong. And there's a lot of black and white thinking in Germany, which I think leads to extremism, which then again, I think leads to people not educating themselves properly on what is going on, for example, right now in Palestine and Gaza, and then not having the space to make an educated decision on where to stand.
Right. So, I mean, I kind of have my own theories about this as well. Growing up around like certain types of white supremacists, because you know, I grew up in Texas, so that's kind of what you get. Like absolutely racist dudes. They try to convince themselves that, you know, they're not racist. So they say things like, I don't see color. I'm colorblind. It's like, dude, everybody sees that. But and the fact that you can't recognize that is problematic. But they support Israel no matter what, because it allows them to soothe some cognitive dissonance by saying, hey, I'm not racist. I support the Jews. But really, they're deeply anti-Semitic for their own reasons, because they'll say like old white supremacist tropes like Jews control the world and the media and stuff. So when it comes to Germany, I made a video about this when the police in Germany and activists in Germany were first starting to gain international attention because of the violence of the protests and the unprecedented response, the unironic response of the German police acting like kind of something reminiscent of Gestapo at these protests. And it was very puzzling to everybody. So I could have just reiterated it or rewrote down the script, but I'm lazy. And so I'm just going to play the video again. This was from mid-January, and this was my theory. And I would like you as a German to...
Please don't call me German. Please don't do it.
You as a Syrian...
living in Germany, yeah.
Yeah. As a Syrian living in Germany, to tell me what you think about it. Okay, yeah. Here we go.
So I'm heavily German. I have extended family members who are German, and when I'm in Germany, people automatically try to speak to me in German. That being said, people are surprised by the insane level of fascism happening in Germany right now, but you should know that nobody out fascists my people. Nobody. After the Second World War, denazification was a thing, but those beliefs in Aryan cultural supremacy, fears of multiculturalism, the distaste for disorder, and the sublimination of personal identity in order to serve a well-regulated and powerful state didn't just go away. And it hasn't just gone away. For how many generations has American exceptionalism persisted? Cultures change slowly, gradually, generally through social upheaval, and interacting with, assimilating, and blending with other cultures in a process known in anthropology as cultural syncretism. Well, Germans have always resisted that, same with a lot of other European nations, but the crime of the Holocaust was hugely shameful, self-destructive, and massively embarrassing. There is a lot of generational trauma surrounding it. That's one reason why they'll always back Israel, no matter what. At least in my German extended family, there is this unspoken idea of ancestral guilt. There's a real sins of the father thing going on, and a lot of people couldn't bear being accused of anti-Semitism. That's one dynamic. The other is plain old European white supremacy. It's colored by European cultural exceptionalism, and in the end, it's plain, basic, boring-ass white supremacy. And Eurocentric white supremacy entails a lot of cognitive dissonance, like fraternité, égalité, excusez mon accent américain, but you're still all about being white, and white supremacists' greatest fear is of being outnumbered. The great thing about Israel is that it allows them to soothe some of that dissonance in a nice, comfortable way. How can we be racist? We support the Jewish state. They conveniently look like us. They are a familiar colonial project, and they are a nice, cozy little ethno state, which we totally fantasize about. So good. So yesterday, they have failed to have a massive anti-fascist protest. The fact that they were even having one is kind of surprising, but people were purportedly flying Israeli flags, and when the Palestinians showed up, they were harassed, spat on, and assaulted. And look, this is why we can't have nice things. I believe the majority of the population will be pro-Israel, which is perforce anti-Palestine, until they die. So I wouldn't expect much from Germany or Austria. In fact, if I know anything about my people, they're only going to double down and get more unreasonable if pressed. So we have that to look forward to. Since I went public on social media, I've had dudes from Central Europe call me race traitor, which is like inner white person drama about how you're actually more contemptible than a non-white person, and that there's also something mentally deficient about you, which is why the Zionists call me Crazy Greg or Greggy Boy. Look, my point is, you can't save them all, and you should manage your expectations for the conduct of Germanic governments and population majorities. Embrace the idea that every rock bottom, there is a trap door, and you'll never be disappointed.
Yeah, so that's kind of my take on the whole situation. I'm not sure it will change. I'm not sure people want to see anything differently. I feel like the Germans have always resisted multiculturalism, like forever.
That's quite interesting, actually. I think you're right. I have to give a little bit of context of where I live. It's mm-hmm. I live in Leipzig, so that is a city in the ex-DDR, so East Germany. And here it was even crazier, you know, it was way later when they allowed people from outside of Germany in. So we had Cubans, Vietnamese people, but also Syrians. And what they did back then, so that was in the 70s when my parents came to the what do you call the DDR in English? What is the word for it?
Like most East people don't even know what that is. People just say East Germany. The average American.
Okay. So it's still East Germany, but back then there was a wall, and it was not ruled. Yeah. So you know the history. Anyway, so when my parents came, they came for studying. And it was always like this, that people were supposed to stay with their people. It was never about mingling with each other. It was never about mingling the Germans with the Arabs, or the Arabs even with the Vietnamese. It was very much separated, even in the housing situation. You know, they arranged housing for everybody. You were not supposed to have kids. You were not supposed to mingle with the society or even become a part of the society, you know? And I think that in East Germany, we even have, and this is where we have a bigger issue with the far right as well. It's on the rise like crazy in East Germany. They have never really gotten used to the normality of cultures intertwining and a culture growing because there are other cultures coming in, you know? So also now, with after 2015, so many Syrian refugees came to Germany, the far right rose even more. I hope that's the past tense of rise. And
it is.
They are. Thank you. they rose even more because it was so convenient for them to say them and us.
Right.
They are so different. Instead of just opening up and making space in a proper way, in an organized way, because it was very disorganized. I was part of, you know, welcoming people back then. They used that to just separate society even more, you know, and use problems that, of course, came up because there's new humans coming in. Every human brings in new problems, you know. And they use these problems to radicalize people. But yeah, Germany is not open to letting cultures intertwine. And this you can see with German culture itself. You can literally see that German culture has not evolved itself. Like if I look at, I'm not trying to say that the US is in any way a place where I feel culturally comfortable with the, you know, US culture, but because of your history, there are so many cultures that just come together that make up different kinds of cultures that you can, you know, enjoy. But in Germany, you don't have a German culture that you can feel
a part of
if you're not German, at least not me. I can't. Most of my friends can't. Yeah.
Well, you know, my grandmother had a lot of problematic ideas, to say the least. I don't think denazification ever happened. Yeah, they've distanced themselves from like the frigging Hugo Boss uniforms and the specific, you know, ideology and the imagery and the iconography, but there's still like this idea of like an ethno state in some ways. And I feel like that's kind of like what some people see in Israel. It's the parallels are insane, because what did you have after the Treaty of Versailles? It gave rise to a narrative that was like a Germans are under attack. It became an ethno state that needs to expand defensively in order to keep itself safe from the rest of its neighbors. And like, that's one parallel I can see with Israel in the context of Germany in the, you know, coming out of the Weimar Republic and then into the Second World War. But this idea of multiculturalism and the lack of access and the lack of inclusion of other people that go to Germany. I came back from a deployment in Afghanistan. This was like in 2013 when the Islamic State was gaining a lot of momentum. And I went on leave to like Vienna and Prague and stuff. And I was kind of like blitzed at the time, very, very drunk. And I was just like stumbling through this neighborhood in Vienna with like one of my friends. And we were just like, boom, Islamic State report recruiting posters just in a suburb of Vienna looking for foreign fighters. And, you know, if you
don't feel,
No. That was the thing. And I just remember looking at it because the Islamic State recruited heavily out of Europe and Canada and North
America. Oh, yeah, I know that. But a poster?
Yeah. It wasn't big. It was just like a flyer.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So people don't understand that like radicalism comes from a lack of inclusion and marginalization. Yes. And so even as like a dude who still had a lot of problematic ideas and like my own amount of like post 9/11 culturally indoctrinated Islamophobia, I was like, huh, like they're kind of like ghettoized into these refugee centers. And like, people are wondering like how the Islamic State is able to get so many foreign fighters from these persecuted or marginalized populations within Europe and North America. So, but that's not really happening with the pro-Palestine thing, but they're still mobilizing this framework and the conflation between, you know, Hamas and the Islamic State, which is an absurd comparison from a counterterrorism perspective. But I'm just wondering, like, do you feel like it's going to change? Is it softening up, or are people like actually starting to see how horrible the situation is in Palestine and start to rethink everything? Or is it just so entrenched it's hopeless? Because Germany is really important. It's a symbolically important country in Europe.
I want to go back to something you said earlier real quick, which mm-hmm. is that Germany never retired from wanting to be an ethno state. Mm-hmm. Is that what you said? Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that I don't think I can agree with that 100%.
Okay.
But I do think that because of a lot of indoctrination that has happened, a lot of populism within the society and with media, people have become so scared. And also the post 9/11 indoctrination happened in Germany in the same way, you know. And I feel like Germany never came out of, you know, the control of the US. I always feel like I feel like there was never an independence when it comes to politics for the Germans to be independent of the US. I'm sorry that my grammar is a little bit off right now. I hope I'm getting my point across.
No, it's perfect. I think I've seen it too. You know, I've been on Ramstein Air Force Base about five different times. It's a large facility. It's an important site. There's, you know, that's where we, it's strategically vital to the US and we're not going to let it go. That's where we flew all of our casualties to out of Iraq and Afghanistan. So we need it there. And we're going to keep levers in place to, you know, control the German government in some ways.
And Germany it always feels like the ugly little stepsister of the US, and that, you know, does anything that the US says. At least this is what it feels like to me. Mm-hmm. Maybe my vision is a little bit tainted by me being an Arab and knowing that after 9/11, all the propaganda that has happened, all the all the Islamophobia that was indoctrinated in the people is so controlled by what has been going on in the US to justify what the US was doing in the world. And to take the ugly little stepsister Germany with them. I'm not saying that they're not responsible themselves, you know, don't get me wrong. This is you know, they should be, but they're not. So I feel like this plays a really big role, the fear. I don't feel like there's a huge fetish of having an ethno state in the normal society. That's not what I feel like. I feel like there's a lot of fear, and this fear comes from this society feeling so good with their wealth and being so privileged that they don't understand what it's like to not have that, while they think they do because of their history and everything that they learned in school that makes them ignore what is happening right now, you know? Right. And there's a lot of anti-fascist mood, like the protest that you were referring to earlier. There's a lot of so-called anti-fascist movements that are against the far right. So we have a party in Germany that's called Alternative for Germany, AfD. And there's a lot of protests by these young, you know, Fridays for Future leftists against this party. And they're huge. These protests are huge. But are they actually anti-fascist? No. Because being against AfD, that's, you can even market that. You can make money off of that. This is, you know, why I also became popular, because I was against the far right, which is so easy to be in Germany. It's so easy to become popular with that kind of stance. But to be actually anti-fascist and look at fascist movements in our own country and fascist movements that are country is supporting in other countries such as Israel, that's too much for a lot of people, because that would actually mean that you have to take action. You have to do things that will cost you money, that will make you lose your job, that will make you argue with a lot of friends, that will make you even lose family. And most people are not unprivileged enough to pay that price to become better.
No, and that's a great point. We see the same thing in the United States with what we call liberals, generally associated with the Democratic Party. You know, they're more scared of Trump than the fact that, you know, their tax dollars are being used to effectuate a genocide, arguably multiple genocides. But they care about Trump because they feel like their rights will be curtailed. So they're... And you know, there's a lot of vote shaming going on in the United States. Well, like, you know, if you don't vote for Biden, you're voting for Trump. It's like, you know, I would vote for Biden if, you know, he wasn't doing this. And instead of complaining about it, you could have just got off your ass and added to the political pressure on the Biden administration to stop this. But no, you wanted to keep going to Starbucks. And now if Trump needs to win for you to actually give a shit, well, I guess just let it burn. Because that's the only way people are going to change is when they, in my opinion, is when they like lose their privilege enough to start caring and start getting uncomfortable and
So you're
start
voting for Trump?
I mean, I guess if the logic is not voting for Biden, I'm gonna do third party because we only have a two-party system, which is actually a uniparty system because they get lobbied by the same people. The only viable thing is a third party. So we'll see. Do you see the situation in Germany changing? Do you see the government ever going to change its stance on Israel continuing to sell it arms, support it unconditionally in the UN, you know, with the ongoing ICJ trial, any movement in the future?
That's a hard one.
Yeah.
Because you know, the people who are in power right now, it's a coalition. Is that a word?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's the correct word. Yeah.
Of different parties. And one of them is the Green Party. And we really had a lot of, I can speak for myself. I had quite some hope because the person who was running for the Green Party, her name was Annalena Baerbock. She's now the foreign minister, foreign affairs minister. She was, you know, campaigning, excuse me. She was campaigning with no arms in, not selling arms into war zones, for example. You know, there's literally a campaign poster saying this. She's also the same one who said that, you know, she stands with Israel in this. Okay. So. And she's been campaigning with saying she's a feminist and she will do feminist foreign policy, foreign affairs policy. I hope that those are all the right words, and she was doing this with like super smart marketing techniques. For example, following people on Instagram that are known as being morally very strong, that are known as being feminist, such as myself, you know? And by that, getting us to support her. So my hope was very big that things would change at least a little bit if she were to be in power. But at the end of the day, nothing. The exact opposite. It's just that it hurts even more to come from a person like that and to be lied to and to be gaslit as well. But I think, because right now we are in second, third, fourth generation of people that come from majority Muslim countries, and we are in positions of power as well. Not saying that this is, you know, the goal of feminism, because, you know, in a capitalist structure, there's always a loser. It doesn't matter who's at the top. It doesn't matter what religion or what color, whatever, what ethnic group they are. But I think that because so many of us are in such, you know, important positions of power, there will have to be change. It will be way too late. It is already too late. It was already too late 5 months ago, but it will come. And you can see that in the public as well. I hardly ever speak to anyone that stands with Israel right now. And I talk, you know, it's like, I'm like, where do these people come from? And so what are these politicians basing their decisions on? It's for sure not the society, you know, because if you go and look at the pro-Israeli protests, don't see a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Let's be honest.
No, you don't.
Yeah. But with the pro-Palestinian, and then again, there's a lot of, white people that are like, I don't know who I'm going to be marching with or who I'm going to be protesting with, so I'd rather not go because there might be extremists and stuff because they're not used to people wearing kufiyas and being normal people. They're not used to, where people wearing hijabs and being normal people or just having long beards and being normal people.
Yeah.
But I
So, so
think these things have to ch they have to change.
yeah. I mean, a lot of them take on the stance like, I just want everybody to get along.
Yo, I've lost friends over this.
Oh yeah.
I don't want nobody to die on any side. Oh, really? You don't say. How about you do something for that?
Children shouldn't be dying, okay? It's like, okay,
Thank you.
awesome. It's so
You're a
helpful.
revolutionary. That's a yeah, it's amazing. I should call you Mandela from now on.
I think you just single-handedly saved this whole goddamn
Oh my
planet.
God, see? Children shouldn't die. That's amazing.
Okay. Well, it's just frustrating because Germany is like symbolically important as a country. It's like France, Germany, and the UK, sometimes Italy, sometimes Spain, but like those are the big players. So we definitely want to see movement in Germany, but it's kind of depressing seeing that not happen.
It's crazy because, there are a couple of people, like I think me and a couple of other people that are protesting very loudly at the moment, like Salah Saeed, my friend and co-protester who's organizing a lot of protests in Berlin. We are being like publicly dragged like crazy. And then like keep in mind coming from where I was, where it's like, oh, this the person that they really love to take on for any kind of, jobs where they're trying to tokenize someone, but also have, because I have a degree in economic psychology, so they can put me in anything really, if I make a documentary, if I make host a podcast, whatever. And the way that they're dragging us right now makes us sit down regularly. And I'm saying this publicly, although I know that this is what they want to hear, but it has to be heard by the leftists because I'm pretty sure that no far right person is listening to this podcast. But
No.
we're sitting down together in the middle of the night, and we're talk. When is it too far? When is it too much? When do we say, okay, this is it, we have to go? When do we pack our bags, take our families, and leave? Because quite frankly, you said this. You said that you had to pack your bags because of your death threats. My DMs have been full of death threats. For what, bitch? Sorry, excuse my language.
No,
But for
send it.
what? For saying that I'm against a genocide and that's like protesting with economically boycotting a company that is supporting a state that is committing a genocide to my people. Keep that in mind. Criminalizing that? Sending me death threats for that? Are you out of your fucking minds? And I'm also reflecting right now because I know that the way that I'm talking right now, they want me to be upset. They want me to, be angry, be this angry Arab woman. And of course, I have moments like this, but at the end of the day, I go to sleep. And I can sleep well because I know that what I'm doing is the right thing. And being against a genocide is not extreme. And this is, the press release that my former employer posted. They're like extreme political views. Are you serious?
Like calling for like just calling for a ceasefire is like the most milquetoast, lame ass, like conservative position you could
Right?
have on this thing.
It's literally like saying, I don't want children to die, and I'm not going to support that with my dollar. That's extreme.
I mean, I go to sleep just fine knowing that I'm a race traitor, apparently.
Greg, it's so bad. I have to tell you one thing. When I look at your videos, it's like it's always so insightful, and I always learn something, but you always make like jokes in the middle of a very bad thing. And then I observe myself laughing at something that's horrible, but you make jokes so perfectly on point.
Well, it's a developed skill set. It's a coping mechanism that I learned during combat deployments. So that's where it comes from. You got to get by some way,
How
you
did
might
you get
not.
out of we have to tell the people, like, we don't really know each other. You just
Yeah, right.
supported me, and we got in touch because you at some point I at some point reached out to you to support my grassroots organization. And then all of this shit happened. But like, how I want to know, like, how did you get out of being a war-liking person?
For I started off in special operations. It's not a unique story. I didn't want to be like homeless and not have a job or whatever. I didn't have the best like growing up environment, which made me uniquely suited for, special operations and stuff. And I felt really safe in war for the first time because there were I never grew up with boundaries or like fixed relationships, but like in the military, you know who your friends are, you know the enemies, you know what your job is, you have your responsibilities. There are stable boundaries that don't change, even if you're getting shot at. So that's kind of, and I talked to my friends about this. It's like, because we all grew up in like broken homes and stuff. It's like being at war was like the first time we actually felt safe. So there was that. A lot of therapy happened, a lot of unlearning, propaganda, a lot of just educating myself about like colonialism, imperialism, how imperialism is bad for the imperialists and colonialism is bad for the colonizer. And I have my own personal axe to grind with the imperialist death machine. So that's it in a nutshell. I never expected to be a public figure. I mean, I'd worked for like NGOs before and helped raise money for like human trafficking and like sexual assault startups and stuff. But I never
Wait,
expected to be a public figure.
I think that could be misunderstood. You raised money for human trafficking?
NGOs, NGOs, anti-human trafficking NGOs. Whoa.
Okay.
I have no idea. Okay.
Wait a second.
Yeah. Sorry. You thought I'm not over here pretending to be an Israeli billionaire, okay? I'm not raising money for human trafficking.
Thank God. Oh my God. I was like, okay. Oh my God. Where did
Oh,
I
yeah. Just, just dabbled in it. But so that's how I came into it. So I try to use that skill set and the things I learned to like talk about conflict fatigue. It's like, just because you're not in Gaza doesn't mean you're not being affected. It doesn't mean it's not exhausting. So you have your own, before we end, you have your own endeavor. Is it a startup? Is it a
It's a
company?
grassroots organization,
Okay.
basically.
Can you tell us more about that?
A couple of months ago, I started working with SAFEBO, which is a grassroots organization founded by Rain Dove. And they made this wonderful organization to evacuate people out of war zones. And they've been doing this successfully already in multiple war zones, such as Ukraine, Afghanistan. And I got involved with them and I worked with them, and it was wonderful, and wonderful to an extent, and how wonderful can it get to do work in times of genocide? But it was, very impactful work because we were actually able to get people out of Gaza and save people's lives. So this is what I did with SAFEBO, and they're just an amazing team, and Rain is an amazing person leading this team. It's a big team. She did an extraordinary job, and they did this for 6 7 months, and it's just exhausting work. I'm going to be honest, it is. We were up until 5 a.m. most nights, because especially during Ramadan, most of the work was done at night. And then we were coordinating with people who wanted to get out at daytime, or actual evacuations happening at daytime. So we were up until 5, up again at 9 or 8. And it was so exhausting. So SAFEBO is now ending evacuation missions for the moment. And I've decided to keep doing this work. So I started my own grassroots organization called the Lemon Tree Collective. We're a small team, and we also evacuate people out of Gaza, Palestine. And we would like any kind of support. That would be wonderful.
Because, absolutely. If you have a website or whatever resources, I'll link it in the description of this video.
Yes, we have an Instagram page. As I said, we're a grassroots, so we're a bunch of, you know, activists, a bunch of people that are against genocide and stand with the Palestinian people. And we raise money to pay for people's evacuations. It is really sad that this is something that, you know, supports a business that should not be there, the business of getting people out of a war zone. And there are people who are profiting from that. But right now, at least for me personally, it's not the time to make the decision of, oh, I don't want to support them, and this is why I think it's fair to people, for people to stay in Gaza if they want to leave. For me, it's, as an ally, my responsibility to help facilitate whatever the needs of the people are to the extent that I can, which is why we also made the decision. And this is where you, I think, wanted to go with what you said earlier, to not work as many cases at once as we did previously, but evacuate a small amount of cases, work them consciously, vet them consciously. You know, of course, we have to be very careful as well, who we support evacuating. We mainly focus on sick children and their mothers, or sick mothers and their children, high-risk pregnancies, etc. And we do this consciously and slowly, in the way that it's okay to do it slowly, of course, because of the fatigue, the burnout that comes with it. In the last 6 months, I don't know how often I felt like my body was going to fall apart. My fingers just got swollen out of nowhere. I just had like inflammation symptoms, although I was perfectly healthy, heart racing, feeling like I'm gonna, you know, have a heart attack. And I feel and I fear that this work will have to be done for quite some time more. So I'm now making the decision of doing it more consciously and slowly in order for me and this wonderful team that I'm working with to not burn out within the next month or so. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, as an anti-war veteran and activist, I often bring up the Vietnam backlash in America, which was like one of the most significant public direct action events and movements in like history. And Vietnam happened for 10 years. Like these people were at it for 10 years. It got gnarly. There were police officers literally murdering college students on like campus and stuff. And so it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. People yeah. are like, people are shocked to see something like this happen. Like we've only been exposed to something this absurd in history books, but it's happening in real time. Yeah. And it seems insane that it's been 6 months and there's been like no movement or very little discernible movement. But these things do take time. So yeah. Don't burn out. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
I think we're at the end of our time. I wanted to thank you so much for coming on, trying to parse through what's going on in Germany. There's a lot, even to me, of German descent that's just kind of unfathomable by how entrenched their steadfast support for Israel is. I wish there was more movement because, again, Germany is a symbolically important country and a politically important country and an economically important country. But
yeah,
it seems like it's going to be locked in this sort of pro-Israel, no matter what stasis, at least for the foreseeable future. And yeah, thanks for coming on, telling your story about getting canned in the tabloids and that whole debacle. And yeah, I'll link your
thank you, Greg.
Yeah, your nonprofit or your grassroots in the description. And thanks so much for
coming on. Thank you so much. Thank you, Greg. Yeah. Thanks for having me, and thanks for doing this work. And also thanks for being an ally. We need, quite frankly, we just need white allies, you know, because this is something that we're lacking in Germany. We're lacking white people who stand with us. And so I'm always very, it sounds very weird, and it sounds like so racist of myself towards my own people, but it feels so wonderful when there's a white person who's with us as well, because it just feels like we're less lonely, really. So I appreciate you doing the work that you're doing. And if, yeah, of course, right now, me talking about what I talked about was the triple fast forward way of saying the things that I want to say. So if any of you listeners want to learn more about what I do and the work that I'm doing, of course, check out my Instagram. Am I doing like promotional work right now? It sounds very promotional.
No, you totally should. I'm actually going to do it for you, because your Instagram will be linked in the description.
Yeah.
All right. So, thank you all for listening. And I think that we're going to post this on Monday, April 21st or something like that. So, all right, y'all. See you next time. Not sure what it's going to be about, but this one was about Germanic fascism.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.